For July the 31st, 2015, we talk about the Razer and Ouya debacle, Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, and we ask you if you've played around with level editors. Welcome to the 114th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jal Apprentice.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. See, I told you guys, I told all of you I would be energetic. I was yawning in the green room. I was yawning in the green room before we recorded, but I'm full of vim, vigor, energy. Let's see here. I am...
And mojito.
It was a disappointing experimental... mint-infused rum and lime concoction. It needs more time. It needs more time. That's all I will say. Jala, happy birthday. It is one day after your birthday as of when we were recording.
Thank you. So it was kind of funny because listener Farmer sent me a message and he's like, so you have to tell me your age-defying secrets because I didn't know you were 33. I'm like, yep, I'm 33. He's like, I thought you were younger than me. So thanks, Farmer.
Yeah. Well, that was that... That's super
so
cool.
So age-defying secrets.
Yeah. I always assumed that it was like a bunch of clean eating and also exercise, which you do a lot.
Yeah,
punching people keeps me youthful.
I steal their punch energy with my fists.
It's true. No, anyway.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah, so we've got kind of the usual episode in store for you tonight. We've got the brief. We've got a multiplayer about user-generated content, and then we're going to round things out with a grind where we talk about the things we have been playing. I don't want to prolong the pre-show ramble because I think that we're going to have a lot to talk about, starting with...
The brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us vis-a-vis something. I forget how that goes. I say roughly the same thing every time, but you know, it's I think the routine keeps us honest, you know.
I want to go.
Oh, Jala, go. She volunteers. I didn't have to prompt anything.
Volunteered. You aren't the... I'm cutting that part off, Cole.
Okay.
All right, so first off, I've got a couple of things. First off, I just wanted to mention that dragon cancer has been in the news lately, namely the Huffington Post and the New Yorker. Mm. So I just wanted to pop that out there. I sent Cole a couple of links so he can put those in the show notes. Also, totally rando, because, you know, everything I do is like that. My news story today is about Aussies. They did a new study about Australian gamers, and they are major gamers, and seniors are the future of gaming there. 68% of Australians play video games, with the average age being 33. So I'd fit right in. All right, nice. So 47% of these are female. Average game time each day is 88 minutes, with 25 minutes spent on casual games like Words with Friends and Candy Crush Saga, and more in-depth games taking up 100 minutes a day for males and 75 minutes for females. The age of gamers is steadily rising, while kids between the ages of 5 and 14 are the most active gaming group, with 91% playing games. Those over 50 are the fastest growing segment, as retirees are playing games to keep their minds active. The study predicts that adults over 75 will represent 1 in 10 gamers by 2018. So...
Do we know how these numbers compare to America?
I do not know. All I know is that they were doing this study over in Australia. I don't know if they've done a similar study in the U.S. I am kind of curious about that, because what I want to know is, because obviously this is a thing, you know, like I've talked about that before, brushed on the subject on prior news posts that I've talked about. I just am kind of curious to see what the... change in age is going to do to what games are being released, you know, like what types of games are going to be released, and, you know, like how that's going to affect, if it's going to affect, you know, the overall aesthetic or storylines or what have you, because, you know, you've got grandma playing, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, if you can't say what this means for America, I can't get interested if it's not about our country. I mean, this is something that like is happening across all entertainment and media, right? Mm-hmm. Like, is, you know, you can't take somebody who grew up in the Depression and suddenly make them savvy about, you know, their MTV or what have you. But as people who kind of reached their prime when these things were here, they have a context or a place in their life for it, right? Mm-hmm. So is it growing fast because all of us are steadily marching towards the grave, and all of a sudden it's not that games are getting more popular. It's just that people who were playing them anyway are aging into the demographic.
Well, they said, you know, for age 75 and older. So that's a pretty large, like, that's an older, way older. This isn't like, you know, yes, the average gamer age is, you know, in the 30s now, where it wasn't before. But, you know, like, they're talking about, like, 1 in 7, you know, 1 in 10 are going to be, you know, like, on Social Security equivalent, you know, that kind of thing. So
I think it's just really impressive given that Australia is a blasted hellscape, as we saw in Mad Max. Like, I don't even know where these people are finding the time to play this many video games.
We have listeners in Australia.
Yeah, we do. Were
they in Mad Max? Were they extras? That's the only thing that's in Australia, right?
That's the only context you have. Go ahead, Ben.
Film it in Africa too. All right, just making sure.
I try to, you know, get kind of like the global perspective. I'm not just talking about America-centric, because we do have listeners from other places. You know, I try to talk about a little bit of everything. So, you know, this one was just, you know, it kind of played into some of the stuff I had talked about previously with, you know, like using games as, you know, ways to treat, you know, mental stuff, or you know, to keep your brain at that kind of thing. Like, I've already touched on that subject in prior news posts, which is why I decided to bring this one up.
No, I mean, so. and you know, this is just more, you know, I guess this is just more proof that games being inclusive is a good thing, because you can't scare people off if this is the way that it's headed, right? Like, it's not just going to, you know, I was wondering, like, you know, when you said, okay, younger folks are the more active demographic, but like, I wonder how many of those younger folks are, and this is just me being afraid of teenagers coming and busting my kneecaps open with carbon fiber batons, but like, you know, just as they tell me to get out of the way, old man. But like, most my impression is that most of them are just watching Let's Plays and calling each other epithets. So
at some point, no, there is going to be a tipping point in games where people are only watching Let's Plays, and the people who are watching Let's Plays will outnumber the Let's Players to an extent where there will not be enough Let's Play content to go around, because everyone will have gone over to watching Let's Plays. Mm-hmm. It'll be dark days. It'll be the gaming dark ages.
You know, and I mean to throw shade at people who watch Let's Plays, because, like, I want to do something like that. And there are people who make Let's Plays that are really great. But, like, boy, oh boy, is it weird to me that, like, my younger relatives spend their days listening to British people talk over Minecraft. You know, or Australian people, as the case may be. Huh.
It does make retirement sound more appealing, though. You can just sit around and play video games. That's awesome.
Yeah. My grandpa, he got one of those like a discount Android tablet, and all he does is play solitaire on there, just like he did on our Pentium 25 or whatever, back in 1993. He played solitaire.
Yeah,
my dad went down a deep dark solitaire hole when we got it was like Windows 95 or whatever the first machine that like had it on it was. And I remember you could set it like casino rules, pull 3 cards at a time, 1 time through the deck. It was like the hardest on all the potential settings you could do. And it had to be months that he just plugged away at it until he finally beat it. And you had all the cards, you know, kind of like jump off the screen like they do when you won. And that probably stayed up on our desktop for a week.
like they do in real life.
Yeah. Sounds like he was in solitaire confinement.
I might actually put in the I know it's been forever since we've done that, but like, oh, that yeah. is
Then I would have slammed my head on the desk if I didn't have crap all over it right now with all my recording stuff.
It was pretty good. You know what? I'm not gonna boo that, because if I would have come up with that, I was trying to work out a solitary thing in my head too. But your delivery was fantastic. You know what makes humor better? Congratulating people for making fun jokes.
Yeah.
Attaboy.
Or dissecting humor. That's usually good too.
Yeah. Ooh boy. You know, that's the thing. You have to kill it before before you can look into it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Hmm. Thank you for that story, Jala.
Well, just a little tidbit this time.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
So I also have a Jala story. Thank you, Jala. she even gave me two options of a story that I could share, so I had a very easy time of doing it this week. But hot on the heels of Evo, I wanted to share this story. They're going to start drug testing competitive video game players. So apparently, you know, the prizes for video game tournaments are getting high enough that this is becoming more of a thing. It also is becoming more of a thing because some of the people who have won video game tournaments have admitted to using Adderall during tournament play. And so they're going to use a similar testing organization that they use for sports. I think it's called the ESL, Electronic Sports League. That's the new one. Mm-hmm. But they're going to start doing random drug testing at every major video game event.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Huh. So how are they going to account for, because it is a younger demographic who, you know, competes in these things. Like when you turn 25, I think they harvest you for your carbon. but how are they going to account for people who actually have prescriptions and need that to function?
I guess it's like the, you know, if you're absent a couple days at school, you got to bring in a doctor's note. Maybe it's like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you get a get out of jail free card or something like that. You're like, no, I have this by prescription.
Help me understand. So, my understanding of Adderall is it gets you wired. Like if you need to stay up all night working on a paper, you take Adderall
so you
don't fall asleep.
But if you have ADHD, it calms you down because of your particular chemistry, or gets you focused, or puts you like right on, like on the right rails, right? If you are a neurotypical person with you know usual brain chemistry, let's put it that way, with non-ADHD chemistry, then it gets you cranked up, it revs your engine, and you know allows you to do that. It's like a study drug. There was a very special episode with Michael J. Fox where he was taking a bunch of speed for it, but yeah, it's basically speed.
Huh. Okay.
That's my understanding of it anyway.
So this would theoretically, well, that's the thing. Like, so I could see how that would help a person with ADHD playing a game, because it would help them focus.
Yeah. For it also helps them function in daily life.
Well, obviously, yeah. Well, yeah, let's focus on the important things, Cole. but then someone who is neurotypical, like you said, would it wire them and make them distractible? Like, does it help them react faster? Is this like how this seems like, man, are they going to ban people from like crushing some Mountain Dews before? I guess I struggle to see the competitive edge.
You know, part of me thinks that it might be something like, okay, corking your bat, like that's a thing that people are like, oh, corking your bat, it's a bad thing. You do that so you can really like, you know, hit the whoppers, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you call it, right? Hitting a whopper.
The official umpire that's in the rule book.
Yep, over the rails. Yeah,
yes.
That's what they call it. But like, it actually doesn't do anything. Like, quirking your bat doesn't, like, it has no effect, but it's still it's scandalous, right?
Yeah.
I quirked an aluminum bat in a Little League. For a laugh.
Too bad that they banned the placebo effect, so you can't do that anymore.
Yeah, they're testing you for placebo. They ask you to pretend to pee in a cup in front of a fake doctor.
You tested positive.
Oh no. No,
it's double. I did.
You tested positive for the secret. It's just a vision board with a bunch of pills on it. sorry. But I wonder how much of an actual advantage Adderall confers to somebody, because I think it's like the caffeine myth. Like, caffeine doesn't make you that much more effective. It just, if you're addicted to it, you can't function without it. So
it makes you regularly effective, which is comparatively more effective.
Yeah. Right. What they need to do is set up a tournament where they definitively have one side all players who are not on it, and then the other side all players who are on it.
Team mm-hmm. Adderall and Team Subtractorall. These are really bad jokes tonight, guys.
So it's weird. I guess it's not weird. It's completely expected that prize money is kind of like wrapped into the reasoning behind this. And it's also probably really good for the sake of competition for them to take it in as well. I don't know. I worry about people who take drugs for, you know, any motivated reason aside from leisure. if that makes any sense. You know, like, if you're just...
Technically, they're taking drugs for leisure, though.
I suppose. Well, is that leisure? Yeah.
They make money. So some of the tournaments that they talk about in the article, they say a particular Counter-Strike tournament, it's a $250,000 prize pool. Mm-hmm. So that definitely sounds like a job. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at that point.
Yeah. I don't know. I just maybe because my drugs of choice and also drugs of prescription chill me the fuck out.
Yeah. Well, and then too, I also have a few gaming buddies who are ADHD and do take Adderall. So, you know, it's like, well, does that mean that they're I don't think they would be barred from the competition if they have like a legal reason for having it. It's just people who don't have a prescription and aren't officially diagnosed, you know, I would think, because they can't be exclusionists like that, you know?
Yeah.
Or I wouldn't think they would be.
Then suddenly everyone, even more so than as usual, everyone suddenly has ADHD and needs this stuff.
Yeah, that's one of those things where, you know, there you can find a doctor. I'll get you a tow by 4 p.m. and I'll find you a doctor who will tell you you have ADHD. Like, it's no problem.
You're going to have Dr. ADHD stands in California now.
Yep.
It's your prescription Adderall.
Right outside of Evo in Seattle. Or right outside of the International. Sorry, guys. I goofed it. I don't know enough about competitive games. Huh. Dennis, how about you? You got a story?
I do. It's about something that could have been really shitty and is handled in a way that is less shitty than I was expecting. But
damn it, you fucking swooped me, didn't you?
Yeah, that's I think so.
So let's tag team it.
Yeah, Razer bought Ouya, mm-hmm. And neglected to really do anything about Ouya's Free the Games fund or something like that. It's called Free the Games fund.
Yeah,
Which basically they basically would pay indie developers, and the total fund was $1 million, but pay indie developers in chunks of, you know, probably about $10,000 on average for exclusivity on the Ouya, and they would get money to help finish their game. And so I think it was, you know, $10,000, 6 months exclusive, not forever, but kind of to try to jumpstart, you know, cool projects, and then also to give the Ouya some kind of reason for existing. And you know, when they were bought by Razer, which I'd never heard that company's name before, so go figure. But when they were bought by Razer, a lot of indie devs were just kind of dropped. There's a clause in the contract that says we don't have to pay you if we go bankrupt or get bought out, or I forget what the technical language is. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of this big, like, oh shit moment where everyone was looking to see what would happen. And kudos to Razer. It seems like they're at least trying to do the right thing, and it seems like they have a grasp on the situation. So I at least have some hope. Initially, what they've come out and said is, hey, we're going to honor the deal with a twist. And I can't decide if I like this twist or not. So what they said is, first off, all bets are off in terms of exclusivity. We're not going to hold you to keeping your game on the platform, on the Ouya, you know, only. You can release it anywhere you want, whenever you want.
In fairness as well, Ouya had actually relaxed some of those restrictions on the fund as well, specifically as regards Kickstarter matching. There were a bunch of high-profile Kickstarter games that were initially looking to be Ouya exclusive, such as like Neverending Nightmares, that horror game that came out last year. But Ouya extended grace to those for multi-platform launch kind of things. So even the exclusivity was a little bit outside of that. I didn't mean to derail you. I just wanted to make sure we were accurate.
No, that's appreciated. I think it also speaks to the fact of that kind of as Ouya was circling the drain, there's kind of a lot of fuck it, I don't know, going on. As they tried to figure out what model was right, because the last thing you want to do is be bankrupt and have everyone pissed off at you. So what Razer said is, you know, exclusivity, they're reiterating what maybe was established already, but also said for the money that is paid out, they will still pay it out, but the developer has to give it back in terms of free copies of the game that they're developing.
Yeah.
And that's the part I can't figure out. I mean, it's the retail price of the game. So, you know, if they were given $10,000 and their game cost $10, then that's, you know, another, they would have to give away, what, 100 free copies of the game?
Something like that.
1,000 free copies? I can't do math. And so that's fine. It's like guaranteed sales of your game. It's not
guaranteed exposure. You're still getting money for it, but like or Razer are pre-buying these. Whereas before that would have been money that was guaranteed from the fund for reaching these development milestones, first a beta, then delivery, and then a certain amount of time after the release. So what's happening is they are that was money they were counting on for development in order to get the thing done, but they are mortgaging the kind of the long tail of their launch.
Exactly. So there's the piece that I can't really wrap my head around. What I think you're still quote unquote getting the money, but you're not really getting the money. Mm-hmm. Like you're not being asked to give your game away for free, but at the same time you were kind of promised this money on top of whatever sales you might have.
Yeah.
So it's in a way it's still being taken back.
Yeah. And being taken back in a way that Razer, I think, can work in as a business and marketing expense for their, Cerebrum or whatever. I just read this story. Yes, their Cortex game store. Yeah. Or storefront, rather, which is going to be not just across Ouya, but also their own Android set-top boxes as well.
Yeah. So I can't decide if this is like a, hey, everyone wins, or if it's kind of a, hey, we're going to dick you over, but we're going to do it in the nicest way possible. Sorry.
Situation. You know, in a public relations centered kind of way, let's make sure we at least fulfill, if not the letter, at least the spirit of the agreement and not look like complete monsters taking away money that was promised to you. Even though we're doing some techno wizardry in order to get around it.
Yeah. So I mean, the big question is, how will the indie community react? And are there going to be any developers who come out and be like, this really screws me over? Or will the reaction be like, hey, okay, I really appreciate the gesture. Understand it's hard because business is changing hands, but you tried to do right by me. So
yeah,
that is, I think we've seen, a step from Razer, which is better than them just doing nothing. So that's good. And I think we have to wait and see how that's received to know how things will play out.
Yeah. I don't know. Like the mystifying thing behind this to me. So I don't know if when they did the deal, they expected to have this $250,000 liability that came with it. But yeah. I have no idea why they bought Razer in the first place. I have two suppositions. The first of which was to buy the game library, which because Ouya is Android, they're able to say at launch for whatever box they release, hey, this supports thousands of games or whatever.
Sure.
Or they're trying to buy and successfully bought a big list of the names of a bunch of gullible people.
Yeah, perhaps.
I mean, if you bought an Ouya because of the promise of the free and open console or whatever, I'm super sorry if it sounds like I'm razzing you, giving you the business or whatever. But like the whole experiment's kind of goofy right up until the very end. And so to put it more charitably and you know, not sound insufferable about it, you know, they bought a big list of early adopters who are, you know, willing to buy this next thing, who are enthusiastic about this kind of proprietary hardware that has a promise of a new philosophy behind it. And they have the ability now to directly reach out to those people and, let's say, cultivate the ecosystem.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Gosh, it's like I do that for a living, isn't it?
No, here's what I want to know is, why is Razer's logo three sperms converging?
So here's the other thing. I've done work for Razer in the past, so I, like, in the interest of disclosure, like, I can't say much more. I have no idea why their logo is that.
That implies that there is some secret reason that you know, but you're not allowed to share.
Well, I mean, that, right? No, I didn't imply it. You inferred it. I can't control what you infer from what I imply. No, I literally have no idea. But it is a distinctly late '90s, early 2000s power PC kind of imagery, which is, yeah. They make good products. Like, actually, I really like what they do. But this, yeah, it's the thing seems like a shot in the dark.
I do like that the graphic for Razer is completely rounded and has, like, no straight edges to it. Anyone else think that's funny?
All right. Oh, yeah. The keyword being edge. I get you. Mm-hmm. Picking it up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got there.
Yeah. So hopefully this shakes out. At the very least, if these developers are getting the amount that they were at least counting on to finish development, because there were some developers, I think, what is it, like Butt Sniffin' Pugs, the developer behind that game, which I know absolutely nothing about, came out and said, yeah, we might have to cut the budget for music because we were counting on that as part of our, you know, beta release kind of thing. And so we're trying to scramble and figure this out. At the very least, if they can get the thing done and in a complete and saleable state on something that might actually be a little bit more viable than that, like, hey, it's on the Cortex store, but also on Steam, and go maybe buy it on Steam because you can get it for free over here and it doesn't help us. Like, maybe some good will be done by this.
Yeah.
That was my story too. So I guess attaboy to me.
Well, great minds think alike.
Well, also China lifted its 15-year ban on consoles. That was another thing.
I saw that too. I don't know what that means. Aside from the fact that it's opened up, like, the biggest country in the world is opened up to this market now.
Yeah, that's why I didn't choose that one. I was like, oh, that is interesting, but I don't know exactly what all that will mean offhand. Yeah.
They still can't put skeletons in their games, though.
Oh,
yeah, like Blizzard has to make a special version of World of Warcraft for China that doesn't feature the skeletons, which, come on.
It's too spooky.
I know you've got a religion and stuff, but, and I respect that. It's fine, but come on, skeletons?
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer section, our listener interaction portion of the show, where we ask you a question and you answer. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people? Again, another turn of phrase that I use at the beginning of this section every show. Go ahead.
Then I tell them what you asked the nice people. So in honor of N++ being released, which has a very comprehensive level editor, I asked if anyone has messed around with level creation, either by modding or by actually using an in-game editor, and what their proudest creation was.
And I will pick us up with Tyler, who writes in saying, yes, I have. There was a smallish game called Mars Explorer that I found back when Apple widgets were more popular, and I got involved in the community, which was mostly dead the last time I checked. It was an exploration / laser tag game. You controlled a car that could grow wings and shoot lasers. Sweet. People would play laser tag, explore maps, or just screw around and make up their own games. At some point, the creator of the game made it easier to add custom levels, and there was a community member who made a level editor for the game. I used the level editor and spent hours making a gigantic maze with a few hidden areas players could find, most notably a hidden tower that you could climb and then drop through a chute into another part of the maze. It got pretty popular, and it, along with another map I made, got added to the default map list in the game, which I was super pumped about. It was kind of fun joining a server that was playing my map, and people would see my name and go, wait, this is your map. I made a total of 3 maps for the game, and I think all 3 got added as default maps, so I'd say that those 3 are my proudest creations in terms of video game levels. Yeah, so Mars Explorer, which I guess I didn't know that widgets could run games, but that's totally cool.
I'm looking at pictures right now. Lots of cars, no wings. I'm kind of disappointed they don't have that in image form.
I think the wings are implied. Nice.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, go ahead, Jala. What's Alan say?
Alan says, the last time I played with a level editor was Excitebike. It just feels like too much like work.
Yeah, that's a... People do it. People do it as work.
It's really involved, and yeah, people do.
Ben, what's Sean say?
Sean says, design has always been an interest of mine, so I played around with the Game Maker and RPG Maker over the years. The most enjoyable experience I had with an in-game create was the Forge mode in Halo. I spent an entire evening once making an obstacle course for my friend to try and navigate the Warthog through. It made use of things like infinitely respawning propane tanks and anti-grav boosters to make a really intricate, multi-layered house of driving horror. it was hilarious watching him make his way like a mouse through my demented maze, and ranks among the best reasons I have ever been awake to at 6 a.m.
Nice, and on the wrong side of going to bed for being awake.
Yeah.
Man, Forge mode was great.
Yeah, that was a huge phenomenon. I remember David is on the show, so I'll represent him talking about games where you would have one player playing as the creator and the other player playing as like the people trying to get the creator. And so it was like throwing tanks at enemies and trying to hit this tiny floating thing. So
yeah, it's like you're playing as a ghost and you can just rain havoc down on these people. Like, you know, I mean, that like that's not really designing an experience. That's more just a weirdly asymmetrical version of the game. But
were there actual like community levels that got endorsed by Microsoft out of that? Does anyone know?
I can't remember. I never looked to see because it was like I had so much fun making my own fun that I never looked, you know, for like custom rule sets and stuff.
Yeah, my understanding was that was overwhelmingly how it was used.
Hmm. Mm. Nice. Dennis, what's David say?
David says, Mario level editor on the TI-83 calculator. Yes! making math class better since the dawn of time, or, you know, whenever it came out.
Oh my gosh, that was really good.
I just can't imagine who originally programmed that. Like, that is a feat.
It really is, and it was staggeringly playable. Like, yeah. Minus some, like, full-screen flicker. Like, I doubt that the full-screen flicker was any worse than, like, the Game Boy versions of Mario.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But this is, like, that is something, like, I will occasionally just drop that at work and say, like, oh, you know, talk about the TI-83. And that is, like, as close as we get outside of the NES to a universal experience. Because I think everybody was looking for ways to make math class better.
Yeah. Did anyone have the teachers that would punish you if they caught you using it by knocking the batteries out with the calculator on and it would delete all the games?
Oh my gosh. That's monstrous.
Yeah, they would go around and actually just flash the RAM or whatever it was. Like they would clear all the memory if they caught you doing that. But they also did it before tests because they understood that people would program in answers. Or formulas and stuff like that. So it was,
which is really funny because now, like, that's all, you know, lots of tests are being designed open book style where it's like, yeah, you don't have to memorize the formulas. We assume the calculators have them already for mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say TI programmed those in pretty soon enough because I remember seeing that you could do derivatives on your calculator. Mm-hmm.
But if you had to show your work, it was good to know what cosine was and all that. Mm-hmm. Which kind of belies the highest level of math that I ever really succeeded at. So I will amble away from that line of questioning and pick up with Roop, who says,
you mentioned it, so you have to do a math problem.
What? I mean, I can explain like the basic idea behind a thing. If you're looking for accuracy, I'm really sorry, Dennis, but most of my skills are soft. You know, I mean, I can talk you out of a math equation just fine.
Convince me that you don't need to do a math equation.
Yep. Nice. Let's see here. Reap writes in saying, I have fond memories of making levels in Tapon Kaiki 4. I kill everything / everyone. What? Is that what that means? Maybe. Huh. The game is from the Finnish indie scene around 96 or 98, if I recall right. The game itself is closest to Hotline Miami in mechanics with a top-down view. editor was really easy to use, and you could do insanely big and difficult maps.
I would like to point out, if that's a translation, he left out the four, so he might just be admitting that he kills everything and everyone right there.
That's weird. I mean, you know, I'm not here to judge your lifestyle.
Yeah, of course not.
This looks like a fun game. It looks like a top-down Grand Theft Auto a little bit.
Sure.
It's got
Grand Theft
Chinatown
Auto.
Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got this weird foreshortening perspective on the buildings and stuff. Huh.
Very cool.
Neat. Jala, what's Glenn say?
Glenn says, I used to make sweet ramps and obstacles with Far Cry 2 level editor. That game got a noise complaint from my neighbors due to us being too loud over our daredevil antics.
Was that just on the PC? Can anybody who's played Far Cry 2 on the console confirm or deny?
No.
I'm pretty sure I have the game, but I don't remember doing it. But no. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember watching demos for the level editor, but never actually trying it when I had it.
Huh. So, like, did they just have, like, outposts you could drop in the savannah?
I think, yeah, but it was like anything you could drop in. Like, it was really comprehensive.
I remember the, like, Far Cry 1 on the PC, they had, like, a level editor, but it was mostly just design your own island.
Hmm.
They all looked really similar to me.
Hmm. Did Far Cry 3 have anything in that vein?
Ben?
Not before, that I, for that matter? Yeah, matter? No.
Not that I can remember for either of them, but again, I think I only played single player in each of those, so I didn't really explore the menu too much.
Hmm. Ben, what's Danny say?
Danny says, a few years ago, I messed around with Team Fortress 2 level editor thing. I never got really good at it, but I did manage to make something I thought was fairly cool that also got put on the level rotation for the team's server I played with.
Hmm.
I wish I kept up with working on it because the map had some clever tricks in it, but then I got too busy to really sit down with the editor and improve it. Word.
Yeah, from what I remember, most of like the source editing stuff, it was really easy to hit a ceiling with it in terms of like fine-tuning stuff. Yeah, it seemed complicated unless they released like a Portal-esque version of it that was kind of easier to deal with. Boy, I'm just recalling the time I spent with the Time Splitters level editor.
Oh, yeah.
It's all rushing back. Wow, I completely Oh, guys, everything is just
getting flashbacks.
Yeah. I have this whole other life that I forgot about. Dennis, what does Brian say?
Brian says, I spent a lot of time with the ZZT editor, which I assume is ZZ Top.
Yes.
But I always set far too grandiose goals, got discouraged, and gave up before I ever made a working level. You can just never get the beards quite as nice as in the original dev levels.
Well, ZZ Top. The first trick is making the guitar spin all the way around on your belt buckle.
Yeah.
Yeah, and inventing the narrative music video, that one is just it is the real test that separates that separates the sharp dressed men from the sharp dressed boys. So
what is ZZT?
I have no idea. I googled it earlier today and honestly all I got was ZZ Top.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Kev Edit ZZT, here we go, is an ANSI character-based video game created in 1991. Zoo of Zero Tolerance. Kev,
it looks like it's got a bit of a NetHack style.
It looks Ultima-y, like early versions of like Ultima 4 or something like that. Yeah.
Cool.
I had no idea. Let's see here. I will pick up with Christopher. Nope. Moving on. The closest I've gotten is making a couple of board games on poster board as a kid. They were so good that I can't even recall what any of them were about.
Nice.
Yeah. It's tough. It's like, you know, you think, hey, maybe I can do this, but you sit down and look at the tools. I don't blame anybody for not like wanting to play around with that.
Yeah, the point that Brian made about grandiose goals and not being able to live up to them is a really high barrier to people actually messing with it. And I think it's part of why Little Big Planet was so so popular, or why their editor works so well, in addition to being really powerful, is that everything kind of had an aesthetic built in. So as long as you could mechanically execute your idea, it would kind of look good.
The style was already there. Yeah.
The style was already there, which was what held me back a lot. But yeah, I digress.
Yeah. No, and I think that, like, Little Big Planet too, I mean, we have a little bit of time here. I think that the biggest thing that did for me anyway was the fact that creation and play were all in the same engine, so they looked and felt the same.
Mm-hmm.
They just had different stuff on top of it, you know, that you could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's someone who created the creation mode as a level that you could play.
Yeah.
And that just got a little inception-y for me.
Yeah. But I mean, like, the second you have to boot up an ugly Windows app that has a tool palette, like, I think you've lost in terms of, you know, not in terms of letting people do cool stuff, but in terms of democratizing it, I suppose. Jala, what does Phil say?
Phil says, "My brother and I used to make Excitebike levels. One of us would go into another room while the other would make a level, then we'd compete to see who got the best time. Apart from that, Racing Destruction Set for Commodore 64 was a lot of fun as well. Nowadays, I don't create a lot of levels, but I do enjoy games that let me play the levels others have made, such as Trackmania or Little Big Planet. It's great to see how creative some people can get."
Yeah.
Agree.
That's the big thing. Like, you just, if these tools are out there, people are going to make good stuff with it.
Well, they're going to make Mario 1-1, they're going to make penises, and then they're going to make cool stuff as well.
Yeah, I mean, that is the tech tree. It is agriculture, writing, combustion engine, Mario 1-1, dicks, weirdly enough. You would think that would come sooner. So all of that had to be achieved in one generation. Just a mad dash to dicks.
Cole, you're going to want to write that down as a title. I'm vetoing.
I'll just put that over in the shame corner. Ben, what does Michael say?
Yeah, segue to give man the tools to create anything, and what does he make? A giant penis. Just like I did in Smash Brothers 4. A rock penis, to be precise. One that had a tip covered in lava, so when players touch it, they would explode off the stage.
It's basically become the new Final Destination. It's all anyone wants to use anymore.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. Had we done that story where the team behind like Lego Universe or whatever the Lego MMO was came out and said that the thing that sunk them was the expense of moderating user content?
No, I hadn't.
I feel like we talked about that, and they said they have no idea how Minecraft hasn't been sued into the Stone Age. Yeah, but yeah, you know, give people some hands, and they'll make a dick. Dennis, what does Steven say?
Steven says, "I'm usually not so good with level creators, but once in Little Big Planet 2, I recreated the opening of Silent Hill Downpour, starting from when the bus falls into the river to when you are chased by the vortex monster thing. Also, I like to mess around with Grand Theft Auto 5's mission creator. Not exactly the same thing, I suppose, but it's still tons of fun to see what one can do with varying combinations of clowns, hipsters with miniguns, and jets."
I feel like there's a use to that. Like, Infamous 2 did something really similar, right? Where it wasn't quite level design, but it was scenario design. Like, it actually lets you put in logic and enemies and stuff like that in order to put that out there. And, like, they actually did a good job with kind of, like, allowing the community to curate that and make it sure it surfaced in the main game, right?
Which game was that?
Infamous 2.
Oh, Infamous 2. Okay. I know there are some MMOs, I want to say City of Heroes, that had a lot of quest design elements as well.
Yeah. You know, again, just a matter of, like, maybe you're not letting them design a space, but you're letting them determine what happens inside of it.
Yeah, and that's a way to let people flex their creativity just as well. Again, that kind of moves the slider even further towards accessible in terms of being able to make your grandiose goals work.
Allison writes in, finally here, I got really into Portal 2 map-making system when they released the update that included the in-game editor. I made and published a few maps I liked and then got a few plays, but never more than that. Then one day I made a map called The Easy Way Out. For some reason, it exploded in popularity, getting thousands of plays and upvotes. It stayed on the front page of the top maps for months. I never made another Portal map again. Now I want to go play this. Wow.
Yeah, right. I want to know what the map's like.
Yeah, me too. Like, The Easy Way Out. Like, if I can find a link to that, I will put it in the notes, I guess.
How much do you want to bet there's a let's play of it? Yep, Portal 2, custom map, Easy Way Out, found it.
So quick. So quick. Oh, well, congratulations.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm just going to reply to her post with the link to that so that people can find it if they want.
Jolly, you ever mess around with this stuff?
Nope. And the main reason why is because I will become absorbed if I start. It's not, to me, it's because I make things all the time. It's kind of like my MO. So, like, if I start, I will get absorbed in that and won't pay attention to anything else for a long time until I'm done with it. And, yeah, like, I don't need to get that absorbed, so I consciously stay away from level editors for that reason.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
So I got two. I think one I mentioned earlier, one of the Star Wars MMO games had a level editor, so I recreated the opening scene for Episode 1, where you, like, kill a bunch of droid decals and stuff, and so that was a lot of fun. And then another one, back when I was, like, in middle school, when I was a kid, I would go to the library before school would start. That was attached to our school. And I made a point-and-click adventure out of a PowerPoint slide.
Huh.
So it was cool. It was, like, a bunch of hidden buttons, you know? So, like, if you click it, it would take you to another slide or whatever. And so I made, like, maybe, like, a 50-slide, like, game or whatever where you could, you know, like, go choose paths or whatever. And, yeah, it was pretty fun.
That is really cool. That's very resourceful. Dennis, didn't you make, like, animations using PowerPoint?
Oh yeah, I very much did. So they were involved too. I probably should have got my hands on Flash or something like that way earlier.
It was like Zhao Zhao style stick figure kung fu, right?
Yeah. So there was some of that. Then I also had a South Park copycat episode, I guess, which was really, really, you know, true to life. Like, I spent a lot of time making the character models look right. Cause the teacher in the class, it was a shop class, a computer design / shop class, had a, you know, how to die in the lab day, where, you know, you kind of went in and he'd walk us through how to machine safety, essentially. Yeah. But it was all in the context of, and do this and you'll get yourself killed. Do this and you'll get yourself killed. So I did a PowerPoint on just You Killed Kenny jokes from South Park, just on all the different machines. And just got really into working on it. You know, it was some huge file size because I was just literally duplicating the slide and moving it every single time. Working on it and didn't realize at one point that my teacher had come up behind me and was watching me do it. And, like, I froze because I was the good kid. Like, I never got in trouble, but I was super bored in his class. And there was this awkward moment where, like, what's going to happen? And then he just started laughing. He thought it was hilarious. Had me send him the file and used that, like, animation for the How to Die in the Lab Day of all future classes.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. If you're the good kid, you can get away with anything. And if you're the smart kid, you'd never have to do any work.
Yeah.
it ruins you for life as the quote unquote good. I wasn't that good and smart. I'm not that smart kid. Yeah. Like, just, it'll stunt you forever and ever. So I'm not surprised at all. You got that you misbehaving turned into a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a fun class. I haven't thought about that class in a while.
How about actual game stuff?
I spent a lot of time in Little Big Planet 2, and it probably taught me more about programming than I've ever gotten from anywhere else, because it has a lot of circuit board stuff in it. So I built a working game of tic-tac-toe, knowing nothing about programming or circuits or anything, just kind of sitting down and, like, having an idea for what I wanted to do and figuring it out. And that was really, really rewarding. The other thing, I was kind of frustrated. I had an idea of a game or just a level that was How Lucky Are You? And it was just a series of buttons, and there was a random command in the level editor for Little Big Planet 2, which was supposed to give you a random result out of X number of options every time you hit it. Mm-hmm. And so what I did is I just put like 10 of those in a row gated so that you had to step on each button to open the door, but then there was a random chance the button would also kill you. And it was like, how many doors could you get through?
Mm-hmm.
And that was your score. So it was, you know, how lucky are you? Only the button returned the exact same result every single time when you actually played the level.
was that on purpose, or did you just not work out the logic?
I couldn't figure out what was wrong. It was just a tool that the game had in it. So I couldn't like open it up and figure out why it was wrong. I don't know if it was just hard coded into the way the level tested, and if I had published it, it would have actually given random results or what, but that was discouraging to have something, an idea that I liked and not able to execute it.
Hmm.
But the biggest thing I did, the most ambitious thing I did, was in Little Big Planet 1. I did a level that was the Batman Begins. Is that what they called that? Yeah.
Yeah.
The first new Batman movie.
Yes. Yeah, there we go.
Feels weird to call that Batman Begins for some reason. Anyway.
Yeah. I mixed it up with Batman Beyond in my head, and that may be what you're doing too.
Yeah. So it was a level that was the entirety of that movie, just kind of abstracted a little bit into a video game level.
Mm-hmm.
So like you had to start by pulling a blue flower up the mountain, and then, you know, do all these different things. And I was really happy with it all the way up until the ending scene. I wanted to do this big thing with the train, sequence, and it exceeded my grasp and never, ever finished it.
Is that something that they probably added tools for to make easier later on, like in terms of moving geometry and stuff like that? Or
I think so. Yeah. I think I could have figured out a way to do it in Little Big Planet 2 easier than in 1 for certain.
Yeah.
But at that point I was so far removed from it that it was just kind of an oh well.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, if I were starting to do a level like that and I had something I wanted to do, I'd be on the forums, I'd be messaging I would be just dogged on the thing until I got it done. So that's why I don't touch them.
let's see here. You also did a bunch of like custom composition in Guitar Hero, right?
Oh, man, I didn't even think about that. Yeah. A lot. For a long time, that was my music editor. And to this date, I think I've got the most songs in Guitar Hero, Warriors of Rock versus GarageBand. And the reason is exactly what we talked about before, where kind of the aesthetic is built in.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you give me GarageBand, I will spend 6 hours trying to find the exact right amount of reverb for the guitar and never get my idea actually out there. Whereas Guitar Hero would kind of force you to just focus on the melody or the core of what the song was about, which was, you know, much more in line with probably my skill set in terms of actually being able to execute anything in my head, and then much more useful in terms of the idea kind of sank or swam much faster.
Yeah. That's kind of a version of what I have too, because like I've got, you know, I'm kind of like Jala insofar as I don't do an awful lot of this anymore because I know my tendency. But like in the past, like not so much with RPG Maker, but the official Hamster Republic RPG creation engine, which was a DOS RPG creation program that my cousin turned me on to. If David was on here, he would be like, oh, yeah, that man. Wow. That because he did a bunch of it as well. But it was like a DOS-esque, you know, way to create and script a very basic RPG, and I checked, and this is still extant. I don't know that it is that it is still out there, but like I had a full suite of stuff, and my problem with that, along with kind of the problem I had with, say, the Aurora engine from Neverwinter Nights, was I would devote my time to getting the, you know, kind of a bare yet what felt like comprehensive understanding of the way the system worked, and then be intimidated by the idea of actually creating content. So what I did was create the illusion of competency, but then procrastinate, like use that and the pursuit of that as a way to procrastinate from actually making something that would last.
So you learned just enough to realize how much you don't know and then got intimidated.
Yes.
Nice.
That is a pretty similar, yeah, that's an accurate way to sum it up. And I haven't messed around with a bunch of stuff. I think that, you know, I'm not too hopeful for my ability to design a kick-ass Mario level, you know, when Mario Maker comes out. I'm excited for that for different reasons. But, yeah, like a bunch of the stuff, like Little Big Planet, like when I was over at your place drinking one day, like, and you opened it up and I was going through the music and I saw that there was a full sequencer built in. I kind of knew that if I dipped a toe into that, I would probably spend 30 hours trying to sequence the right music and then not make anything out of it. And that put me off of it. No matter how fun the entire experience would be, I knew that was the road I would walk. Because I wanted to, not because I couldn't help it, but just because that is the way that gravity works for me.
You kind of like the human tendency that I think everyone has is to want to use the full extent of the tools available to you. So you kind of need to find this sweet spot in level editors where the depth of what's available to you just matches up with your talent.
Mm-hmm.
Or your ability at that time. So too little and you'll feel limited and you know, get frustrated. Too much and you spend your time overwhelmed or adding more detail than you need.
Mm-hmm. Or being focused on this thing that nobody would care about but you would care about. Trying to fool yourself into thinking this is a worthwhile pursuit. But there is such a thing as productive procrastination, and I call that, you know, let's say. I don't know, some number of hours out of my week.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was a good question, Dennis. Thank you for putting that out there. And thank you everybody for responding.
Yahoo.
Yeah. If you would like to participate in these, just go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and look for those on Tuesday afternoons. Dennis is kind enough to put them out. And yeah, we really appreciate everybody who has come out. We had a couple of new faces here. I love that our community is the size that it is. Obviously, we want it to be bigger, but we are growing at a rate that I can see when new people join and kind of gauge the growth rate and keep track of everybody. So it's awesome when new people join the fold because I can tell, like, this is the first time they've come in.
Also, yeah. I also have to say that I'm very glad for Christopher Schlee's nope, because, like, everybody else is, like, the only people answering were people who had, except for him. So you go, man. You go.
The grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing over the past period of time. Jala, since you have been away for a while, I'm going to give you an opportunity to go first.
Oh, God. Okay, I'll try to make it as quick as possible. I've been playing some stuff. First off, I have to give daps to all my co-op peeps, because I've been playing some co-op with some peeps. Okay. So, Gauntlet with James Robinson, David, and Nolan. Dungeon Defenders 2 with Phil Holmes and Nolan. Broforce with John Fitch, who some people may know as JP from the Geek Life podcast. And Orcs Must Die 2 with Allison Baker. So, yahoo for everybody. All right. Some quick notes on Dungeon Defenders 2. Since the last time I played, they've made some updates. It is an alpha, so they're adding stuff all the time. They've added pets. They can be leveled up independently. They actively attack and grant passive effects, while which both vary depending upon what skin, you know, like what overall, like, you know, like there's different types of pets, and just like whatever skin it is changes the element of their attack and what passive effects they have. They are picked up as loot via eggs, and they must be hatched. You can only incubate one egg at a time in the main, you know, tavern area, and this takes several hours, but eggs rot after 48 hours, so you only have a certain amount of time to hatch eggs, and so you can have too many eggs and not be able to hatch all of them.
Is that like a real-time thing where it's...
Yes, it is real.
You have to log back in and...
Yeah. Yeah, it is a real-time thing. I'm not really too jazzed about that, but they give you so many eggs, you're not really hurting for any, at least at this point.
I'm sorry, I missed the title of this game.
Dungeon Defenders 2.
Okay, cool.
They rebalanced it to make it easier to solo the first couple of levels, but of course after that it gets pretty hard pretty fast because it's meant for co-op. They have new maps with multiple levels, you know, like vertical levels up and down. Primary and secondary defense points, additional monster access points. If certain locks are broken by the hordes, they can like throw stuff at it and unlock valves and things to get through like a sewer or whatever.
That's a big update.
Yeah, and that grants the enemies closer access to the primary defense points. Like, they are way close to the primary defense points, so you cannot let those get broken. So they made it a lot more complicated, and it's really fun. I've been having a lot of fun playing that co-op with people. So
how do they scale the difficulty when you play with more people?
I think it's the same, except they just add more creatures. You know, like the defense points are still the same on the map, no matter how many people are on the map. But I think they just scale up like the level, the number of big bads that come at you, I guess, or something like that. Like, I don't really notice because I've played with a consistent number of people. So I know that they drastically reduce how many creatures come out when it's just you, because you have to defend like 4 points. But, you know, like, if you have multiple people on the map with you, I can't gauge how they scale that up. I'm presuming it's just number of creatures that come on the stage.
Okay.
So, other stuff I played. I played Early Frost Warning, which is based on a story that Gary wrote. It's included in the soundtrack when you purchase the game. It was also read by Gary on Pilot Season back in 2013, and I can't really say much about it because it's short, but it's worth playing, so you should do it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I played the whole story, H-O-L-E. It was made by 7 high school girls during a Girls Make Games International Summer Camp. Girls Make Games started because 47% of all gamers are women, but only 12.5% of industry devs are women. So it's just to promote women in the industry, since, you know, they're nearly half of all gamers, but there aren't very many female devs. Mm. It is a top-down RPG where you dig up clues, literally, with a shovel to make progress. You can unlock secret levels, upgrade your gear, and customize the main character. It's another short game, so I can't really say much, but I can recommend playing Early Frost Warning and the whole story in the same sitting, because you can probably get through both.
So the whole story has like a narrative around it.
Yeah, there's a very basic narrative through the whole thing, and it's got it's got humor that's based mostly around like puns and like, you know, but what seems like Laffy Taffy jokes, because that was made by high school girls. But then there's also these insightful little jabs that are actually really witty, that, you know, are like, oh, that's actually really cool, you know, that, you know, these high school girls have also noticed and picked up on and made comments on. So it's pretty cool. So
I want to say there was also another game that prominently featured a shovel. In addition to this game and Shovel Knight, because Shovel Knight is the obvious other one, but I'm calling that there's going to be a shovel renaissance here, like there was a crossbow or a bow and arrow renaissance a while back, where just like every game had to have a bow and arrow in it. I think we're starting to see that with shovels here.
Half-Life 3, Gordon Freeman has a shovel.
Yes.
There you go. So, okay, so those are some really quick ones. I've got 2 more. I promise the next one will be really fast, so I can get to the one I really, really want to talk about. Bionic Heart is a visual novel set in London in the year 2099. Climate change has corrupted the weather and made the Earth subject to perpetual rain. You play as Luke Black, who is a 36-year-old engineer working for nanotech. The story starts when a genoid, a female robot, basically an android is a male robot, escapes from the lab where she was made and hides out at your flat. And it's just everything that happens literally from the very beginning can create a new ending. There are 24 endings for this game.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, like, yeah, there's a lot of different ways this whole thing can play out, from like you not opening the door when the genoid's on the other side of the door, and then like the game ends and that's it. Like, 5 minutes, it's over. No, seriously.
It's the Indigo Prophecy school of multiple endings, where game overs are endings. Cool.
Yeah, basically. So there is a relationship system for all of the main characters, including your best friend, Tom. It's not a dating sim, but there are a few endings where you end up with either the girlfriend that you start the game with or with the genoid. But some of them are really kind of crazy, so they aren't happy endings. So it's not always the best idea to end up with one of the people. But anyway, I've got about 18 of the endings, and I just stopped. I couldn't take any more.
What platform is this for?
It's on Steam and also on iOS. I played the iOS version. The Steam version apparently has an optional voiceover, but from what I heard of it, just from looking at YouTube, it's terrible, and I don't recommend ever listening to the voiceover. But anyway, like it has a lot of different endings. Some of them are kind of cool. Some of them not so much. When I was playing through, I was like, God, every ending I'm getting is terrible. Like, they're all sad and depressing or creepy, and, and a good portion of them are not happy endings.
Yeah.
But, you know, with a name like Bionic Heart, I'm like, oh, God, it's a dating sim, but it really wasn't. So, you know. Anyway, so I played through that and got 18 endings.
This art style, wow. I mean, what you describe sounds like a cool game, like in a cool story, but... Oh boy, this art style is rough shakes.
Yeah, I know, but I was just like, okay, I'm determined to find non-dating sim visual novel games that I can play that are not on the DS.
Yeah, not on the DS. So, there we go. A crucial stipulation.
So anyway, there was that. That was not so much an exciting one, but my very favorite thing. Is Leviathan, The Last Day of the Decade. That is the one that I'm very much looking forward to talking about. Anybody who's paid attention to me on social media or talked to me at all knows that I like this game and that I've been ranting about it for a while. It is an episodic visual novel adventure game for both PC and iOS by Lostwood Games, which is a Russian developer. There are 5 episodes total, with 4 currently available in English and the 5th being released in Russian next month. The studio is looking for a professional translator right now to translate the last episode and then go back to proofread all of the prior episodes. But since they don't have the translator yet, as of this time, the release date for the final chapter in English hasn't been announced, but they have stuck to it and, you know, been plugging along with the game all this time, so I know it will come out. I just don't know when. It is by far my favorite thing that I played lately. The setting reminds me of, in many ways, of Dishonored, although the story and the gameplay are very different. Although they are very different types of games, and even, you know, their settings, of course, have their variants. Both of them have a kind of dystopian, quasi-Victorian, steampunk-type aesthetic. Mm-hmm. I actually want to do some kind of fan art for this game. So that says something, because I don't exactly feel the urge to do that very often.
Yeah.
So let me tell you a little bit about it. The country is ravaged by the Decade, which is a disease caused by an entity the ancestors of the current elite uncovered in a crater generations ago. They named this creature the Plague King and offered it a chalice of their own blood as a covenant after it killed off everybody who attacked it. Like, they sent armies after it and all of them died. So in a desperation, the elite, you know, made a pact with the Plague King, and now the nobles rule as a council, and the Plague King, you know, is like over the head of everything.
So it's like a combination of Bloodborne and Warcraft.
Something like that. The Decade Plague shows up kind of at random, but after it starts, it lasts exactly 10 years, which is why it's called the Decade. You play as Oliver Vertran, which is the noble son of a line of demon hunters who was just a boy when the current decade began. His mother is murdered, and he becomes the adopted son of the murderer. During the course of the game, what you're trying to do is seek evidence against your guardian because you want to see him locked away for killing your mother, but you also suffer conflicting emotions as he has cared for you. He's strict, but he's fair, but he offers you love and protection, but he killed your mother. And sometimes he says things that you can see. He's got, like, psycho nuts killer in there somewhere, but you don't see it, you know? So as the story progresses, you learn more and more about what causes him to be a kind of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde character with righteous and violent sides. You also learn more about your own family history, your friends, your society. While it sounds kind of dull, like, by this description, it actually is just because I can't spoil it by telling you too much. It's very richly designed, and the cast of characters in the world and everything all have a lot of interesting nuance to them, good and bad traits, and a level of depth and care that makes them memorable. Yeah. Like, the game begins with you carrying a severed head home so you can raise a demon, and you're like a school kid who gets beat up on the way home by bullies. Yeah. And then the demon that you raise is an old woman named Edna. So even if the whole scene is totally macabre by this, like, you know, dead head on, you know, like a altar table and stuff, she ends up being kind of like a chatty grandma. So it's really weirdly dark, funny, and touching all at one time.
Yeah.
And the tone of the whole game spans like a complex mixture of emotions, which is probably part of why I like it so much, because it's not like a simple, you know, here's your basic, you know, script kind of a game. Like, it doesn't follow a normal formula. Of note is that Oliver's best friend Kale is pretty much the only really nice person in the game, and he is also not so secretly in love with you, but he hasn't admitted it. This actually caused problems with Lost Wood when they sought to find a publisher for their game, because Russian society is known for its intolerance of sexual preferences. They did eventually find a producer for Wii and Vita versions, but didn't have the funding necessary to port it over, unfortunately.
Right.
But the game is made by a team that has shown it a lot of love. They pursued working on it through a lot of different trials and tribulations. And episode 4 was actually translated by fans, so it's a little rough. But they will be having a professional translator go back through it. I've already played through the game a few times and will probably play through several more before episode 5 drops in English. So,
yeah.
You know.
How's the replay value of the game?
I've already played it a couple of times, and I'm interested to go back and play it again, because there's so many different details that, at least for me, when I'm going through and playing it, not only do I want to see the different ways that all the characters will act and react depending upon my choices, but also there's just a lot of information that, after you've read it a couple of times about the history or about the characters, you pick up a little bit more each time, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
The first 4 episodes take about 6 hours to go through, so it's pretty short right now. The 5th episode, when that comes out, will make it a little bit longer, but...
Yeah. So, when you talk about this replayability, does this take kind of the visual novel? I mean, just kind of like, even in this very episode, when you talked about Bionic Carts having the multiple endings and stuff like that?
Uh-huh.
Does this have kind of that same branching path kind of structure, or is it more like a traditional adventure game kind of thing where it is kind of funneling you along into a more designed is the wrong word, because even the you know, everything's designed right in this
on rails
in the genre, right? Like, so you know, you talk about replaying it to notice different things, but you're not making different choices as you go along. Like, it has decided the information it wants to show you, and you are passing gates in order to see more of it.
Well, there is a system where basically your choices can lead you to become corrupted by, you know, like demonic evil tendencies and stuff. And if you become aberrant, then there is a system of something that will come and basically kill you off if you become too aberrant. And so you can be like, what it seems to be to me is like, it kind of funnels you along for most of it, except in this one instance of how, like, your level of aberration. If you are, you know, killing people left and right because you have a demon servant and stuff like that, then that will affect how the game plays out. I actually, the next playthrough I go through, I'm going to start killing people. I haven't done it because that's not my natural tendency, is not to just go murder everybody in sight.
Yeah.
So I've been playing it the nice way, but I want to go through and see what happens when I do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, and it does have a reward system too. Like, if you are virtuous and whatever, and you do right by everybody and you help people out, then you actually are given stuff. So I want to see if you also have rewards or just punishments for doing negative things.
Hmm.
You know, so I'm curious to see about that, but I haven't played through that particular quest line so far. But even if it does funnel me through, you know, pretty much the same main story points, I still enjoy the interactions that go on between the characters each time I choose a different option. So yeah. It's still replayable to me, even though I know that it's going to funnel me down the same path, if that makes sense.
Yeah, linearity isn't necessarily bad. I mean, you know, there's definitely something to be said for picking stuff up on subsequent playthroughs.
Yeah, and this definitely has that kind of a thing where it's got just so many different things and, you know, a lot of different details in the art that, you know, as you play a little bit more of it, you notice more things every time you go through. And like I said, I will be playing through the Aberrant version, like killing everybody and being mean to everybody and see what happens. But
nice. Yeah, I'm curious about this, like from art style alone. And, you know, I'm down with world building and mood and atmosphere. I think those are wonderful opportunities that games have to tell story that a lot of different storytelling mediums do not take enough advantage of. So, like, this is something that's been on my radar, especially since you brought it up the first time. But yeah, I'm excited to hear you talk about it. What's the mix between, like, I don't know, like, you describe it as a mixture between, like, a visual novel and adventure game. Like, how much puzzle solving is going on in this?
It's not really so much, like, there's lots of areas where you have to click on stuff and do certain things, manipulate objects in the environment, but so far as I've seen, there's not really any major level of puzzle solving. It's just a matter of, like, figuring out what in the environment you need to be messing with. There are some teeny tiny minor things, like I've got a few things that I have yet to figure out. Like, you end up, if you follow one particular path line, if you pick up on one particular thing, you end up getting a box that has to be unlocked by, you know, like an engineer or something, because it's got all these different buttons and stuff, and I haven't figured out how to get that open yet. And there's some other minor things like that, but they're not essential to the main story, so it seems like any puzzle solving is primarily going to be like an optional thing.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. Like, those are optional extras. So that way, if you don't like that kind of aspect, you can still play through the main game and not have to fiddle with it. So
that's cool. It's like putting the fudge on the bottom so you can decide how much you want in any given bite.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Nice. That's a very apt description.
Neat. Any other questions about Leviathan? It sounds like no.
It looks cool. It's not a question, but
it is. It's really cool to the point that I actually want to make fan art, not actually of the characters, but of the world, because it is interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And at this point, at least as of episode 4, you have not seen the Plague King. You have not seen all of that other history stuff, but that would be stuff that I would be interested in seeing illustrated. So I may just illustrate it myself. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah.
Damn it. I'll do it myself.
Right.
Nice. Let's see here. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I was going to say I can go. I only have one small one. I finished playing the Swapper, so I beat that over the weekend. And actually, I guess I have a little bit more. I did play, so I'll just do an overview real quick. I also played Borderlands 2 with Dennis for a little bit. And then I also had a video game party with some of my coworkers, which was really fun, where we played a whole bunch of retro video games. So we played Street Fighter, we played Fusion Frenzy, we tried to play Halo 2 but failed. And
how'd you fail to play Halo 2?
There was a Halo 2 case, but upon opening the case, there was no Halo 2. Oh.
Wow. You were the only person in the past 5 years who has said the words Fusion Frenzy, but more remarkable than that, said it without utter disdain in your voice.
Dude, that game's awesome. I loved it when I played it in high school, and I had a good time playing it last week. It was the twisted system where it's just a two-button game. You just press A or B to jump or duck. It's great.
Huh. So that was Microsoft's answer to Mario Party, right?
Yeah, and straight up, it's not as good as Mario Party. Well, let's get that out of the way. But some of the games are pretty good.
Uh-huh.
They also have a sumo one that's really good, where it's like a circular path or a circular game board. Everyone's in like hamster balls pretty much, and they're trying to knock other people off, but then the circular board shrinks, like sections of it will fall off, so it gets smaller and smaller, so the tension gets better and better. Mm-hmm. So there's good game design there. So
Yeah, I'll admit I think I played it like a couple of weekends in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not very experienced with Fusion Frenzy. It is not a well-regarded game, so I'm probably prejudiced.
It's okay. There's a couple of gems in there. Overall, it's not, you know, an earth-shattering game, but yeah.
You know what? I think I know what bothers me. They misspell fusion. They spell fusion with a Z.
They do. Wait,
how?
What?
F-U-Z-I-O-N?
Yeah. And so when I in my years working at GameStop trying to file that game, just every time I had to look at that title, it made me more upset.
Should I acknowledge the Z or put it under F-U-S?
It's kind of like there was an early, I think it was like 360 game called Adrenaline Racers. It was adrenaline, but there was an E at the end of adrenaline. And it was like this weird like snowboard rail grinding game called Adrenaline Racers. And every time I looked at it, it just made me very upset. It's like you printed box art with this, kind of like Kirby Air Ride. What? It's Kirby's Air Ride. Talk to me about the swapper. Did it stick the landing? Like what's your summation of the experience of playing swapper?
I mean, it's a small game. I don't think it's like there's not a whole lot of meat there. So I mean, most of the time I feel like the narrative, I mean, there's two different things. There's narrative by text when you walk across these magic rocks, and there's puzzles, and you kind of ping pong between those two for a pretty long while. There's one kind of like narrative part at the end, or one narrative thrust. And that part was good, but I don't know how seriously I can take this story. I mean, like it's interesting. The narrative's trying to play off of what the game mechanic is that you can switch between bodies and stuff.
Yeah.
So it kind of talks about, you know, okay, what is consciousness? You know, like if you have your mind in a different body, then what does your body, you know, like, what does that mean? But it kind of is one of those think about it type of games almost, you know?
Yeah.
And the ending was there was an interesting ending to it, I guess.
Yeah.
So that was fine. But I would say more play the game if you're into interesting puzzles, because the puzzles were pretty well designed. So.
Did it feel like they were kind of growing the complexity of what they were asking you to do in line with kind of your growing competency with the verb set?
Kind of. I think there's only like two mechanics that they really add from the end to the beginning. One of the other variables they control is the number of clones that you can make. So at the beginning, you can only kind of create like one or two, and you're doing kind of simpler things. And then by the end, you can usually do like four or five. But comparing it to something like Portal or something, there a lot of the tricks were kind of cheaper, where it was like, oh, I should have just killed this guy, and then I could have got through, and it wasn't that difficult. Like the puzzles weren't exactly maybe as satisfying as some of the Portal puzzles were, but they were still good. I mean, they're still pretty interesting, and so there were probably a good half a dozen puzzles that had me stuck for maybe 20 to 30 minutes. So
yeah. I mean, Portal is a pretty high bar to compare.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah.
I'm guilty
of doing that.
Yeah, I'm not. But I mean, like, if there's a better option out there, but like,
yeah.
the fact that you are mentioning them, I mean, like, there's only so much Portal to play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting mechanic. If you're looking for like a small puzzle game, then it's definitely worth checking out.
Nice.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Cool.
Dennis, how about you?
Sure. Three games off the top of my head that I've been playing, although I guess four since I did play Borderlands 2 with Merkel. And we're like, I find myself, you made a really good comment, Ben, that it's one of the few like shooters that feels very replayable.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think most, and it's not from a Call of Duty online multiplayer, but like the kind of the main co-op quest line. It's just it's fun to play.
Is that a matter of class and build, or?
Yeah, I think you get a lot of like I'm playing a very healer oriented class, which feels very different than playing like a critical hit damage sniper or something like that. So I think that's a large part of it. I think too, it's like I said, mechanically fun to play, but the randomization of the weapons, makes it so that you're always finding cool, fun, new stuff to play with. So the reason that it stays mechanically fun to play for so long is that you get such a different variety in the functionality of the guns. And they've done a really good job of not just making it surface level so that you've got five weapon types that do essentially the same thing, to the gun's function will be very just vastly different. Like, you might have a gun that shoots a horizontal spread of bullets, or you might have, like, I found a rocket launcher where the bullet speed was so high it essentially functioned as a sniper rifle.
Like a hit scan rocket launcher?
Basically, yeah. And that was a lot of fun to play with. There have been guns where the bullets fire in spirals, or, you know, it launches something that's actually a grenade. I think you call that a grenade launcher, but anyway, so like, but they've done the randomization of the guns has a lot more variance to it than just the numbers for damage going up or down and cosmetic differences. Hmm. Like it can have a dramatic influence on the way that you play.
Hmm.
So I think that's what makes it fun.
Nice.
Yeah, and people should play that game with us, because I'm trying to do a little more of that and would love people to play with, because that's how Borderlands is best enjoyed on PS3. So I did that. I tried Thief, the reboot of that series, which it plays like a worse version of Dishonored.
Hmm.
So if you haven't played Dishonored, I don't know why you would play Thief.
It's like all the people who made the good things about Thief left and made Dishonored. And you're not a person who likes Dishonored, I might add.
Yeah, I was about to say. And the other problem with that is that I didn't particularly care for Dishonored.
You're one of those just blights upon humanity.
Aww.
Okay. Okay. You're one of the people who holds that opinion. Okay, there we go. I phrased it less strongly.
How much of it did you play, Dennis? Because I played a bit into that one too, and you know, like I was like, it's all right. I didn't stick to it though.
I was kind of halfway through the first mission. So I played the tutorial. I played halfway through the first mission, and I realized that everything down to like picking up the random things that you find in the landscape feels like Dishonored. Like it, you know, in Dishonored, it's fish oil, and in Thief, it's candlesticks, but it's still the exact same feel.
So the act of thieving is what's wrong with Thief.
Basically, yeah. But the stealth feels the same, and the plot of, oh, I'm starting to get these supernatural abilities feels very the same. The world does not feel dissimilar. Like, I was... You know, I got halfway through it and I'm like, I feel like I'm playing Dishonored now. And I know for a fact, because I've tried Dishonored a couple times, that Dishonored does it better. So I don't know why I'm sticking around. And I kind of bounced off of it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it too. Although I liked Dishonored, I didn't really stick very well to Thief. So I was like, it's not terrible, but I don't know. I wasn't, you know, attached.
Yeah, that said, if you're someone who like really loved Dishonored in that genre of game, and you're like, where can I get more of this? Well, you've got somewhere to go now. Yeah,
either wait 2 years for Dishonored 2 to come out.
Yeah.
I don't think you're a blight upon humanity. I think that we disagree about a video game.
I think you were trying to be humorous. We don't need
okay,
to be
there we go.
About
no,
that.
I just want to make sure.
Yeah, and you're one of the mindless sheeple who likes that game despite it being obviously horrible.
I only like it because people smarter than me said it was good. So. Continue, Ness.
Yeah, if the listeners are not able to identify when we're having fun joking around with each other, then there are deeper problems to worry about. Anyway.
I worry when I say something like that somebody will think, does he not like me because I don't like Dishonored? Like, that's video games, man. Like, it's fine. It's cool.
Cole, I'm going to cry. Don't make me cry.
We love you all. We will make fun of your video game tastes and find some way to alienate you, I'm sure. But it's all in good fun.
Yep.
Yeah, so I don't know that I have that much else to say about it. It's, like you said, if I liked Dishonored, it would have made me want to go play Dishonored again.
Yeah.
Instead, it just made me want to go do something else. So,
Didn't I make that effectively that same comment after I played some of Thief? Didn't I say didn't? Because I think I was doing that right before I finished the Dishonored DLC. And so, like, I played a little bit of Thief and then went and played Dishonored, I think is what happened.
I think I remember you mentioning that, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's what happened to me. So,
yeah. Corroborated. In the short time I played it, the character animation in that game is abhorrent, though. So that's the one significant edge that Dishonored has. It's just it's bad.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to spend too much time begging on. It's just not for me. And what have you? What else? I played Geometry Wars 3. Also, Geometry Wars free because it was on PlayStation Plus. It's a competent little twin stick shooter. They do a good job of mixing up the objectives and kind of the rules of play so that it's not exactly the same thing every time. I guess the big shtick is that the playing field changes shape. So you could be on a circular plane, or you could be on a cube, or you could be on, you know, something that has two sides that you can only get, two from one point. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's about pointing your sticks at things to make them into smaller things that eventually turn into points.
You never, so you because you never were an Xbox person, you never played Geometry Wars 2 or the Geometry Wars Retro Evolved or whatever, right?
No, I this is my first entry in the series. Okay.
You probably were like, what is it, Stardust or something like that for the PlayStation?
Super Stardust was my
Super
jam.
Super Stardust HD, yeah. So, we probably have similar opinions of our first exposures to this kind of Robotron-esque game reinterpreted on modern consoles and stuff like that. I have a tremendous amount of affection for Geometry Wars. I too downloaded this for the Vita when it was available on PS Plus, but I kind of have been waiting for when I would have time and attention to really like dive into it so I could properly unseat anybody who is on my friends list.
you're on my friends list.
Yeah,
because they're the shared friends list.
No, I will blow past you, don't worry.
I welcome the challenge. It's the thing that I like about it versus Super Stardust is whereas with Stardust, you kind of start at the beginning each time and try to work your way to the end of the game on a set number of lives. This kind of breaks it into levels, which feels a little more achievable if you just want to dip in and play for a little bit. Whereas Stardust, I think I always fall away from because it's like, if I'm good enough to play this thing, I'm going to be at it for 2 hours. Hmm. Geometry Wars, you can get a nice little 2-minute experience.
Yeah.
But the variance in objectives is what I really liked. So they have a mode called Pacifist.
Oh, gosh, I love Pacifist mode.
Yeah, so you can only get points by flying through gates to destroy the enemies. That's really cool. They have King of the, like, I think it's just called King, but it's like a King of the Hill mode where you can only fire when you're inside certain zones, but those zones will disappear. So you've kind of got to zip from place to place dodging people so that you can get to a turret, essentially, that you can fire from. They have kind of your standard survive this many waves or survive this amount of time, but it's just enough variance to make it feel different without straying from the core of what makes the game fun.
So you don't select a mode at the beginning. It kind of like shifts you around.
Yeah, exactly.
Round to round.
There's like discrete levels as you progress through. It's the map is almost like a game board of sorts.
Hmm.
And you get star ratings for each level and compare your scores and all that stuff. So
yeah.
Like I said, it's on. So that's a lot of fun. And then I finally tried Risk of Rain.
Oh,
yeah. Which I've had in my inventory forever, and I think it just, maybe not recently, but it was not on Mac when I initially got it, and now it is.
Yeah.
So I've been playing that over the past couple of days.
So this is the kind of like wave-based, side-scrolling, pixel art, roguelike kind of game where you're fighting a bunch of small stuff until there's a big boss battle that ushers you into the next level.
Yeah, that's essentially the way it works. It took me a while to get the feel of the game because I think I the first couple times I played I was a little frustrated because it's like I'm just standing around fighting stuff until I die, like, and but I, you know, it's all the small stuff, like I don't feel like I'm getting anywhere, or if by the time I do get to the boss, I'm so overwhelmed with other small enemies that it doesn't feel doable. And eventually you kind of go, oh, okay, no, really, you're kind of supposed to make this mad dash to find the teleporter, which triggers the boss, versus fighting your way there.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can kind of get the boss faster, because you have to survive the boss for a certain amount of time before enemies stop spawning. So if you take too long to get to the teleporter, you basically just have so many small enemies spawn that you get overwhelmed. And so that changed significantly the way I approached the game, and I had significantly more fun when I took the, hey, it's a race to find the teleporter, and then you kind of dig in and fight.
Hmm. So, were you playing this by yourself, or were you playing it online with some folks?
By myself so far, although I've heard good things about the co-op mode. So
you can co-op it, because I have that game in my Steam list and have not touched it.
Oh yeah,
it's co-op.
Yeah, it's straight co-op.
Well then, Dennis,
straight co-oping.
Yeah.
And listeners, whoever has that game.
Yeah. So that's I've only got 2 days of experience with it. I finally got out of the first level on my latest run and had this amazing tear where I got through like 5 different levels. And felt really good about myself.
Yeah, I bet as soon as you get into co-op mode, you're going to be bitter because you'll be like, oh my God, this is so much easier.
Yeah. I don't know how much it balances for the number of players. It could not be balancing at all. And yeah, it's just meant to be played co-op. But yeah, that's a one that I am excited to spend more time with.
Nice.
And that's me.
Wow. Man, we've got so many games this week.
So many games.
Abundance.
Part of the reason for me is because I ran through and beat like 4 different games in co-op with half the world because, you know, like it's been a few weeks since the last time I was on. So...
What's amazing to me is that we've all, I guess maybe with the exception of Ben, but even Ben kind of had a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We've all played so many games, and we're kind of on track time-wise, though.
Yes, we are. I know, right? And so I'm going to put that at risk.
Yeah. Cole, you are under special obligation to derail us. We cannot.
Yeah, it's up to you, man.
I suppose. Wow. Huh. Well, let's see here. Let me stall here.
See, I did my best to get through all my junk. I had so many games. Oh my God.
So, I'm going to close up old business. I beat Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yahoo!
Ooh.
Yeah. Didn't finish it. Like, you know, I beat the main storyline, and I consider that beaten. You know, I'm not going to 100% it. I'm not a Ben Merkel circa 2006, 100%ing San Andreas, which I still admire you for doing. No, hey, you had a mission. I'm not entirely satisfied with the way the main storyline resolved.
Okay.
It just felt a little bit too convenient, I suppose.
Can you say how you ended your game without spoiling the game?
Death Wish, third option.
Okay.
Yes. Which I have no idea why anybody would take the first two options when it is so clear.
Pretty harsh. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You know, but yeah, so I will say I wish all of the heist missions were as engaging as the first one was, the one where you are making your first score, stealing from the jewelry store. I thought it was just going to be a mid-game doldrums and it was going to kind of resolve itself and just kind of pick back up with some steam, but nothing really felt as novel as that for the rest of the time. However, I will say that the 3 character kind of motif gave them the ability to make sure you were always doing the most interesting thing in a mission and also let the missions be more complicated. So even if you weren't on a heist mission and you were just doing like a, hey, we've got all hands on deck for this one, you know, it wouldn't make you play the boring part. It would, it would encourage you and sometimes force you to switch to the person who is doing the most interesting thing. And I think that is a tremendous affordance for, you know, kind of quality of life and of, you know, just playability, right?
Nice.
Yeah.
It's an elegant solution to having boring low points.
Yeah. You know, and it makes it so that they don't have to structure the missions in an unrealistic way where everything is all action all the time for this one person who is doing this thing. Like it just, it lets it kind of just be, you know, So yeah, I like Grand Theft Auto 5. I'm playing it on PS4. It's one of those things where like I kind of wish I had it on PC so I could play it in like 1080p or 60 frames, but I did all of it in first person mode. I got the trophy for that, and that is the way I would recommend everybody play it, because that is a very fun way to engage with this kind of open world game.
Did you spend any time in third person just to get a feel for it, or you kind of picked your horse and you're going to ride it?
I picked my horse, and I've played enough third person Grand Theft Auto games that I know how it feels. Mm. There are times when it forces you to do that. Not so much when you are on foot, but sometimes in different vehicles where they either didn't develop a like an interior for it, or honestly, like sometimes with helicopters or planes, it makes more sense to be in a third person view so you don't crash into the ground. Or there are kind of some fine details. So I dipped out of it, but I did enough time to get the trophy for that. And I would say like 95% of the time I was looking, I was in first person.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Let's see here. Briefly, I played some N++.
Did you buy it?
Yes. So that came out today as of when we were recording this. Big fan of N and N+. I don't see an awful lot that is new about this version in terms of the levels that I have played through. So far, like, it's mostly things that I have seen before or, vaguely remember seeing before, but it is incredibly fun to play. I'm a little bit bummed out that it is PS4 only. This seems like a game that would just punish on Vita, but,
It's gotta be coming. There's no way it's not coming.
It's gotta be. And I hope it's crossplay. And like, I want to support these guys because they've really made a good feeling very competent, very difficult side-scrolling platformer that just takes advantage of momentum in a way that turns platforming into a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to support them. I had no second thoughts about forking over the 1999 or whatever, but it was like, it was just a little bit of a damper that I can't play this in bed, to frustrate myself into not being able to fall asleep. But this does the Geometry Wars kind of thing where after every level it shows you how you rank against your friends. So add me, I'm Don't Tree Riddle on PSN, and we can compare scores and whatnot. But yeah, it feels like N, and I'm kind of waiting for the new doodads and obstacles, but if it doesn't show me those, whatever, it's N, and I'm happy to play it again.
The big thing that I saw leading up to the launch is that they added some multiplayer stuff, which looked really fun, where, everyone starts and you're kind of racing to the end of this level. And the first person to finish kind of quote unquote wins. And every remaining person has a homing rocket fired after them. And so it's this extra pressure to finish quickly or die.
That's what I wish would happen in Mario Kart.
That everyone will have a red shell fired after them?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like blue shells, but not for first player.
Yeah. I mean, it makes it so that anybody who doesn't finish in first place has their position cemented, right? There can't be jockeying for third. But just a little bit of incentive for everybody to cross.
Yeah.
Yeah, for everybody to finish up.
But it was, I watched some multiplayer. I watched some Let's Plays of the multiplayer on that, and it looked really, really fun.
Yeah. I feel like there was multiplayer on the 360, but I have no recollection of the specifics of it. I don't know. But yeah, it's fun and it looks great. The soundtrack is fantastic.
Oh yeah.
As well. Yeah. It definitely, it was good coming out my sound system, which is nice. Yeah.
I used it for the level editor, question. I actually don't know if the level editor is available in PS4, which I guess it's PS4 only. So
yeah,
I have to imagine there is one.
It would have to be. I didn't look. Honestly, there were a lot of menu items. I just wanted to get in and play. Like this was the end of the day, and I just wanted to get in there and play some jumping around levels. So it may be there. I apologize if I come across as ignorant.
Cool.
Yeah. I played and beat Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, which is no accomplishment because it is literally like an hour long, maybe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's like an engine demo.
Yep. Wait, Jala, you are very, very quiet.
Just said that I have it too, and I need to go and beat that too.
Yeah, do it, because it's really good. Like, so this is, it is an engine demo, Ben. And it acts a little bit like the tanker demo from Metal Gear Solid 2, you know, 15 years ago. Hey, everybody, welcome. That was 15 years ago. I'm just putting up double birds to the concept of time and space. it's a single mission with a bunch of variants that you can do in kind of the same space. And it is introducing you to kind of the more open world style of stealth that they're having you do. I haven't done an awful lot with Metal Gear since Metal Gear Solid 4. I wasn't that in love with their third person camera controls, and either that or in the subsistence version of Snake Eater, honestly. But this feels a little bit better, a little bit more intuitive. They're asking you to do more with less in terms of the stealth there. It's still third person. There's no like soliton radar, so you're not playing this entire game in the upper right quadrant of your screen.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have an amazing system, which I think is the bulk of what I want to discuss, because there's a lot of like problematic stuff with the narrative. Like, they do some pretty upsetting things to women in this, but like, I don't have context for it because I never played Peace Walker, which is a shame. But that, you know, it's one of those things where like, yeah, that's upsetting, maybe for the sake of being upsetting, but what are you buying by planting a bomb there in a lady? I don't know if you're buying enough to offset what it cost, but anyway, the system that they put in place to kind of like manage the complexity of this wide open world where there are a bunch of guards kind of wandering around is the ability to mark enemies and guards.
Okay.
So
I think they kind of featured that in the demo that they did of it.
They did, and it's the thing that makes it manageable. And as somebody who places markers for a living, I really appreciated it. But
is it like once you see them, you can kind of see them forever?
Yeah. So you have to kind of center them in your view or look at them through binoculars, which incentivizes kind of a style of play that I never really did in Metal Gear or other stealth games before, which is survey an area. So
that's how Far Cry does their stealth.
Oh, nice. Wow. So I never played either 3 or 4, so I don't know. But yeah, like, you know, you begin the game on a hill next to this kind of it's a fictionalized version of Guantanamo Bay. Like, it's in Cuba. It's where they keep prisoners who may or may not need to be there. You're, you know, the Master Miller encourages you over radio, you know, go through and look. And when you zoom in on an enemy, it places a little triangle over them and it marks it in his computer, which I shit you not is called the iDroid.
Of course it is.
Nice.
That bums me out on just such a cosmic level. I know that Metal Gear is like super goofy. Like, it's one of my favorite series in the entire world because of that. But iDroid?
Yep.
But anyway.
Solitaire confinement.
But anyway, once you have marked an enemy, it is kind of logged in the system, and not only can you get like a little heads up display of a triangle whenever you are in range of them, you can actually get like text updates of their state. So it says like, oh, so and so is suspicious, so and so is, you know, dropping their guard, so and so is moving from the area, so and so is calling in. And also, if you're close enough that they can see you, you can actually get like an X-ray view through like a solid piece of equipment in order to see like which way they're facing, et cetera, et cetera. So again, this really does incentivize surveying the area and making a plan of attack and catching as many of them as you can. And, you know, while X-ray vision through a wall is less realistic maybe than the soliton radar, like, or the sonar radar for Metal Gear Solid 3, like, this still allows you, it still allows the game to surprise you with somebody who was like maybe out taking a piss. when you were making your, you know, so there can still be somebody that you didn't catch on to, you know, from your surveying. So it keeps you on your toes. And like, I am super excited for the Phantom Pain, and I am more motivated now than ever to go and be Peace Walker so I can get a little bit more context on Big Boss's story from where it left off with Metal Gear Solid 3.
So is it kind of like Hitman? It looks like Hitman to me.
Yeah, it's a little Hitman-y. It's a little Blood Money in terms of the open world kind of stuff, or the, you know, trying to make your own way through this, you know, kind of like system and stasis they have developed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, there's no shame in that. There's no shame in adopting what another game has done well in order to improve on their own formula, right?
Sure.
Feels like to me anyway, like I recognize that as well. but yeah, Hitman DNA is definitely there, it feels like.
Okay.
And there are like different scenarios you can do. Like there's deja vu and jamais vu. And deja vu has you recreating certain scenarios from Metal Gear Solid 1. So it is basically Metal Gear Solid 2. or there is Jamais Vu, which has you, I think you're playing as Raiden. I haven't played it, but I've just read about it. You're playing as Raiden and you are going around trying to kill snatchers. Yes.
What?
Sure.
Yeah.
Snatcher, no snatching.
No, not Swiper, but no, Snatchers, like the visual novel game that Kojima developed. They are replicants. They are Blade Runner-esque replicants who are replacing people. So you're going around and trying to take them out, which, like, again, they're making the most of what they have. Like, it is one big map with a bunch of, you know, a bunch of different kind of like little micro environments all up ends. But yeah. Yeah. Nice. Any questions about that?
Are you convinced to buy the full feature length game
when it comes up? Yeah. Okay. I mean, this is possibly the last Metal Gear Solid game. Like, obviously I am. Yeah. Let's see here. And I haven't played much of it, but I'm just going to make a note of it. I have played a game about a white-haired, gruff-voiced man who is going around in an open world trying to save all that is dear to him.
Is it Leisure Suit Larry, the elderly deers? Or
No, I'm talking about Nier. I'm sorry, I thought I was juking towards Witcher.
Mm-hmm. Wait, is it The Witcher or is it Nier?
No, it's Nier. Nier.
Oh, yeah. Wait, what are you doing? Why aren't you playing The Witcher?
I'm just being contrarian. No, honestly, I had three open world RPGs that I wanted to play. And so I wrote them in a list in random order, and I went to random.org and I rolled up a random number, and Nier was the one that came up. I've been playing
that's some extraordinary lengths.
What's that?
That's some extraordinary lengths to make sure you get a random one.
I know, right? But I couldn't decide if I wanted to play The Witcher, if I wanted to play Nier, if I wanted to play Dragon's Dogma. Like, all three of them seemed equally appealing. The Witcher, obviously. But, I don't know. I wanted to do that. So I played it while I was on the exercise bike tonight. I did, like, 90 minutes, and I got through all the intro stuff. Seems neat. It does something that I think is really cool in fantasy when they do it, kind of in a Dark Tower kind of way, where it begins in what feels like a post-apocalyptic modern world, but then quickly advances into a past that's so, or a future that is so distant that it might as well be the past.
Sure. Yeah.
And the main setup of it is so basic as to be kind of farcical. You are a dad who is trying to find a cure for his daughter, and you are going around doing various kind of quests for people in your village in order to figure this out. And the thing that has made this plague upon the world is the Black Book, and you just so happen to find the White Book. or you know, grimoire vice in order to get the skills that you need to fight it. I'm kind of hoping they throw a twist in there a little bit, just to put a little bit of some stank on it, as it were, so it's not purely that. But everything I've heard from fans who have been urging me/us/everybody to play this game has indicated that is the case, that it's going to do more interesting things with it. But it kind of plays like a like a mixture of, let's say, I hate X meets Y, but you know, it is the best language we have, you know, afforded to us. A mixture of like God of War meets Zelda meets Dark Souls, insofar as it is a basic combo system with different weapons, and it puts an emphasis on guarding and rolling in order to create enough of a window to do special attacks in order to, you know, do the most damage you can.
Nice. Sounds up your alley.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll be interested to hear more about it as you play to see where it goes from here.
Yeah.
So how long did you delay The Witcher 3 for?
Probably, if how long to beat is to be believed, about 40 hours. But okay. Now, you know, it's one of those things, right, where, you know, I don't mean to make the show my excuse for procrastinating on this, because God knows I need to play a seven-year-old game in order to, you know, keep it here. But we talked about The Witcher a lot recently. I want to come to it with a little bit more time and buffer. Like, otherwise we run into a Resident Evil 6 situation where we are talking about the same game for literally 8 months.
Gotta pass the baton.
Yep. But yeah, that's everything. Holy shit, we played a lot of games, everybody.
Yep.
What do you know? Yeah. A games podcast where we actually play games.
Wow, it's so weird. I'm not used to this. Do we have to
play nothing next week? We got to make up for it.
Do we have to take a month off, Jala?
I was just gonna say that I forgot to mention that Leviathan has episode 1 for free on iOS. There is not a demo on Steam, but it is free on iOS if you do have an iDevice. For the first episode, at least. So, listeners, yeah. Well, listeners can at least play that if they happen to have an iDevice that will pick that up, so they can try it out and see what they think.
Yeah, let us know, because that developer is especially, you know, kind of responsive in terms of that. That feels like something we could talk to them about and get like an interview. So let us know if you're interested in that.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah. Let's see here. Do you all want to button it up?
Buttons.
The credit. So yeah, I feel like I took us over the time.
It's okay. Which,
yeah, you know, it's one of those things, but here we are. Thank you so much for listening to episode 114 of The Level. Those three digits, they still get me. They still get me, everybody. In terms of network business and stuff like that, we have some cool things coming down the pike that I can't quite announce yet, but I would encourage you to pay attention to the usual channels for some good stuff. But in the meantime, boy oh boy, are we so happy to see new people responding in the multiplayer section. People are still liking us on Facebook at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, still hitting us up on Twitter, and playing co-op games, it sounds like. So I love our fan base, and I love the community that has kind of sprung up around this inane jabber that we do every week. It definitely warms my heart. So I don't want it to go unnoticed that it is good. Jala.
I was just going to add too that, it is no longer just Dennis who is twitching some stuff to the peoples. I twitched some of Castlevania Lords of Shadow Mirror of Fate a bit ago, and then I also uploaded it to YouTube, and I put links in places, but I'm like as Jala Prendez, not as The Level, so like it was on The Level page somewhere, but like as me, not like, so you'll have to go to post made to page, I think, to see that, but anyway, so yeah, I did that. So every once in a while, if people like that, I did have some of the listeners come and watch me play live and, you know, ask some questions and stuff and just kind of, you know, do that number. One thing that I do is I actually do have my webcam on so you can see my face because I make lots of fun expressions, so I am told, so you can actually see me as I'm playing and watch me react to things.
Yeah.
So although this is a game I've already played, if I play something new, that would be probably a lot of fun to watch my face as I go through something for the first time. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's a thing. It's out there in the world.
Remind the nice people what the URLs for that are.
Twitch.tv/Jalachan and on YouTube. I don't know what my URL is for that, to be honest.
Yeah, but just do a search.
Yeah, you cool. Find me. I'm there.
Is there anything I'm forgetting, everybody?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So until next time, I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I have been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
Always Jellachan.
Sometimes Merkelize here.
I've updated the front page of duckfeed.tv in order to have all of the host Twitters on them. And so now everybody has a handy reference for how little you tweet, Ben.
Yeah, I was gonna say Ben is only sometimes Merkelizer every few months, maybe.
every 6 months roughly. I've got you on there, Jella. I've got you on the social tab on there. So aww,
yeah. Yay.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear my almost tweet for the week?
Ooh, gosh. I kinda want you to just make it as a tweet, but go ahead.
I thought about tweeting it, but I backed off. But it was gonna be Israel is really Israeli.
That's one of those jokes that only it wouldn't work just in audio. It wouldn't work just in text. It has to work specifically for a type of person who processes, you know, text as sound in their head. Huh. Yeah.
How frequently do you have these almost tweets that pop up in your head?
Cool. I don't know. Wow, Ben. I don't know. I got to filter it, you know.
Yeah.
Got to get some quality control.
Pop filter.
Ben has just a text file with like thousands of lines.
For me and only me.
But anyway, until next time, just remember, life is a mad dash to dicks. No, wait, stick around for the title. Because Dennis, you vetoed that like a prude.
But see, there's lava at the tip. Be careful.
Oh, watch out. So I only have two non-Dennis vetoed options.
Let's go a layer deeper. Let's not just go for the surface level.
Yeah, for the surface level goofs. Let's see here. So
you want the really penetrating goofs.
Man, don't say penetrate.
Who's the brood now?
Like, we knuckleheads from old times, but I don't need you to say penetrate in front of me.
It's inappropriate to him, although I was snickering, but that's okay.
No, I laughed. It's fine. I just, you know, I need to work with you. Okay.
Move forward.
Moving forward. Does anybody have one they want to submit?
What about, placebo testing.
So placebo testing. That is one that I've captured. I have you tested positive for the secret. And I also have solitaire confinement, which given how much it popped up and how much we kind of hung around it.
That's a good one too.
Yeah. I feel like so solitaire confinement would be my goof. That's what I want to throw him, but I don't want to swoop it if somebody has a compelling case to make for something else.
No, I think that's a very titleable goof. For
yeah.
Me.
It works.
Titleable goof. Okay.
And
so
that is now the title. No, okay.
You know, if I was feeling more saucy, I would definitely, make that titleable goof just because, you know, but I'm not feeling saucy, so.
Mm-hmm. The mojito wasn't ready. You're not saucy.
It was just an experiment. I poured a little bit off the top of my infusion and just, you know, just to test it, right? And I'm not going to drink straight rum. I'm not a monster.
Infusion with an S.